Tonight, Dennis is going to share some readings with us and lead our discussion. So I'm going to turn it over to Dennis. Thank you.
Thank you, Joan. I think everybody knows me, but you know, my name is Dennis. I've been a Sangha member for a while, over a year, I think. But, Domio asked me to share a teaching that I thought would be valuable and interesting to the Sangha. It's an article I've chosen on Shempa, which is a Tibetan Buddhist term, roughly meaning attachment. It's by Pema Chodron. Found this very profound, practical, and insightful for becoming aware of and working with attachment. Although Pema Chodron practices Tibetan Buddhism, this teaching is consistent with the tenets of our Zen practice. So, in our ongoing quest, personal quest, to avoid generating negative karma through speech, thought, deed, this struck me as a valuable tool to help us catch ourselves before we react reflexively or slip into bad habit, thinking it will bring happiness. Joan will help with a portion of this, and afterwards we can discuss how we can implement these things in our daily life and not get hooked, as they say. So this is Pema Chodron's simple four-step practice for working with attachment. So, two fish are swimming around a hook with a juicy worm dangling from it. One of the fish is doing all it can to stop itself from biting the worm. The other is swimming calmly, undisturbed by the hook or the worm. Wondering how the other fish is so calm, the tempted fish asks, "How is it that this juicy worm doesn't tempt you at all?" The other fish replies, "The secret is non-attachment." One of the most attractive ideas in Buddhism is that we can learn to let go and not be so attached to things. We hear people like the Dalai Lama say, "Attachment is the origin, the root of suffering. Hence, it is the cause of suffering." And we think if we can overcome our attachments to all people, pleasures, comforts in our lives, then we'd be able to live freely. But how do we do it? We may think we need to give up all our material possessions and go live like a monk. Or we need to not be so dramatic and engaged with life and learn to just not give a darn. Or maybe we need to learn to somehow let go of it all. But there's a big problem with this common idea of attachment. I think it's about holding on to physical items, possessions, desires, locations, and people. And that, therefore, to be not attached, we need to learn how to not be so invested in these things and how to become aloof, distant, and indifferent to them. But like the fishes circling around the hook, there will always be temptations and hooks dangling in front of us. The idea of not being attached has nothing to do with getting rid of everything in our life or pretending like nothing bothers us. Rather, it's to do with paying closer attention to what ideas we have that may be causing us to cling to such things in the first place. The word attachment was only recently used for Buddhist idea that there is no direct equivalent to in the English language. It comes from the Pali word upadana, and it's also translated as clinging. According to the Buddha, clinging or craving is the primary root of suffering. By this, he means that by constantly trying to find permanence, stability, certainty, and satisfaction in inherently impermanent, unstable, uncertain, and dissatisfying conditions, it's only going to lead to problems. And yet we cling to such things because they give us some relief from uneasiness, and with help from our biased memory, our culture, and those around us, we come to think they're the source of our happiness. Like clinging to rocks while falling from a cliff, we cling to the things around us, hoping they'll somehow stop the fall and solve our predicament. This isn't to say you can't find satisfaction and stability in things that change. If you're constantly looking for them in your work, relationship, pets, then you're going to be constantly deluded or disappointed. So if we are clinging and holding on to things for dear life, the answer isn't often as simple as just let go. We have to think more about what we are not recognizing or turning away from. The fact is that we're already falling and always will be. The problem of attachment isn't that we're holding on to specific things and need to figure out how to let them go. It's that we're clinging to certain ideas that prevent us from being with the reality of change. When we can figure out how to be with the reality of impermanence, we are practicing non-attachment. We come into a space where we can not only be fully present with and enjoy what we have when we have it, we can also be at peace should things change, as they inevitably will. The Zen master Achan Cha put it in the book Thoughts Without a Thinker by Mark Epstein. You see that goblet? Asked Achan Cha, the Thai meditation master. For me, this glass is already broken. I enjoy it. I drink out of it. It holds my water admirably, sometimes even reflecting the sun in beautiful patterns. If I should tap it, it has a lovely ring to it. When I put this glass on the shelf and the wind knocks it over, or my elbow brushes it off the table and it falls to the ground and shatters, I say, of course, when I understand that the glass is already broken, every moment with it is precious. Oh. Let's switch readers.
I can just sit here. Shenpa, the source of attachment. Part of this struggle to understand attachment and be without it is what we typically get caught up in the content of our experiences. Whether it be the special soulmate, the job we've worked our lives for, or our precious MS, Snuggles Pussycat, we think the particular thing, object, person, or behavior we imagine is what makes us feel good and is what we need to feel complete. But here's the thing. We don't cling to and attach to things and actions because of what we think they are. We cling to and attach to them because of what we think they do for our happiness. With this approach, the focus switches from the special thing out there we're attached to how we relate to ourselves. In Buddhism, the emphasis is not on the contents of experience, as say it may be in psychotherapy. It's on underlying qualities. In this case, the underlying sense of clinging, desire, and attachment is known in Tibetan Buddhism as Shenpa. In her book, Taking the Leap, Freeing Ourselves from Old Habits and Fears, Pema Chodron talks about Shenpa as the sticky feeling that causes us to tighten up, close off from, and get hooked by whatever is happening. Shenpa is fueled by trying to avoid the underlying insecurity of living in a world that's always changing. The slight unease or restlessness that can sit in the background of everything we do, otherwise known as dukkha. Quote, we all want some kind of relief from that unease, dukkha, so we can turn to what we enjoy, food, alcohol, drugs, sex, work, or shopping. In moderation, what we enjoy might be very delightful. We can appreciate its taste and its presence in our life. But when we empower it with the idea that it will bring us comfort, that it will remove our unease, we get hooked, end quote. A fundamental sense of happiness and stability cannot be found in anything that's impermanent. In fact, it's the habit of getting hooked and trying to find it in changing conditions that takes us away from seeing that it's already ours. Thankfully, we can get unhooked from Shempa starting now. Anytime we notice the urge to escape our experience and find relief by clinging, and instead welcome and work with it, we are freeing ourselves from Shempa to a life of being continually dissatisfied. If we're deep in the habit of associating whatever behaviors or actions we're doing with relief from our own discomfort, this may be a process. But Shempa leads directly to the root of our inability to be with the inherently impermanent nature of life. Then even if we can be with it at the smallest level, we can make huge changes in our lives and become much less dependent on changing conditions for our sense of basic fundamental happiness. Emma Children's 4 R's practice for attachment. Meditation is the perfect way to practice Shenpa. Whenever there's discomfort or restlessness or boredom, any insecurity of any form, Shenpa kicks in to try and save the day. Instead of giving into, pushing away, or following after the thoughts as we may normally do, we can learn to come back to the present moment and stay with what's happening, the uneasiness, the tightening, the itch of Shenpa. We sit with the desire to escape the moment and the urge for something different than what is happening. And in doing so, we unhook from the habitual patterns that can rule our lives, that keep us caught in clinging, and come to be at peace with the flow of change. The key is that seeing Shempa doesn't turn into self-denigration. It's also a practice, not some miracle that can undo habituation overnight. But once you see how it happens, then the process of unhooking is already underway. The 4 R's are recognition, refraining, relaxing into the basic feeling, and resolving to continue this way throughout your life. The more you do it, the more you'll find spaciousness and get in touch with your basic goodness or innate wisdom, also called Buddha nature or prajna. Here, Pema's recommended 4 steps for working with Shempa from the Shempa syndrome. Try bringing it into an existing meditation practice, any spare moments you have in your day, or make it into its own. 1, recognition. This is how in meditation we see the first glimmer of a thought, feeling, or sensation that causes us to want to scratch that itch. 2, refraining. Once we see the possibility of being hooked, we also see that we can refrain from taking the next step. For example, when we feel criticized by someone, we notice that we consistently tense up. Noticing this reaction allows us to stay with the situation and refrain from being defensive or to display any variety of default responses. Pema advises us to do this always with a light touch so that the reminders themselves do not become a hammer that we use to beat ourselves over the head. 3, relaxing. After we have clearly seen the mechanics of our habitual patterns, we can relax into the situation and let it unravel naturally in our mind. And 4, resolving. This step is for us to resolve to keep working this way with our mind and our emotions for the rest of our lives. And now I'm going to turn it back over to Dennis.
So I guess this kind of brings us to the discussion part. If anybody has any experience with this sort of thing, probably don't need to go into breakout rooms. I think you can just raise hands if anybody has any comments, experiences like this. How would you handle these situations? Does it seem like it's a potentially worthwhile exercise? If not, I have more to read. There was another. Oh, Jimmy, okay.
I was looking for the raise hand thing. First of all, Dennis, thank you for doing this. I'm so glad you did. And I've been doing Rohatsu online. And so I took a break from it to listen to what you had to say. And the first R is recognition. What is it? It's recognition. That's very interesting and very apropos to what I heard today from Chosen Bays. And, you know, she's all about mindfulness. And that to me is highly related to recognition, because if I am not paying full attention, whatever it is will go right over my head. I just won't even notice it. And so the watchword, excuse me, the watchword for this Rohatsu is alert awareness. I think that first step is a very big one. In my own experience. Thanks.
Thank you. And it doesn't move from there. You can't move to the next one without the recognition. You know, you can't begin to refrain without knowing what you're refraining from. There was another passage. This was actually written by Pema Chodron. The other article was written by somebody else based on her theories, but this was written by Pema Chodron specifically, and it talks about good and bad Shimba. It's kind of interesting, so I'll run through this real quick and see if that sparks any other comments or conversations. So there's Shimba to positive experience, Shimba to negative experience, Shimba to everything, really. Say, for instance, you meditated and you felt a sort of settling and a sort of calmness, sense of well-being. Maybe thoughts came and went and they didn't hook you, and you were able to come back and there wasn't a sense of struggle. Afterwards, that actually very pleasant experience comes Shimpa. I did it right. I got it right. That's how it should be. That's the model. It either builds arrogance, or conversely, it builds poverty mind, because the next session is nothing like that. Then you have the bad one, which is not bad. It's just that you sat there and you were very discursive and you were observing, obsessing about someone at home, something at work, something you have to do. You worried and you fretted, or you got into a fear or anger. So you have this meditation that, by your standards, is bad. And it isn't bad. It's just what it was. But then the Shimpa. That's where we get caught. That's where we get hooked. That's where it gets sticky. To use Buddhist language, as long as there's Shimpa, it's strengthening ego clinging. In other words, good experience, ego gets stronger about good. Bad experience, ego gets stronger about bad. That's why I think this Shimpa is really such a helpful teaching. It's the tightening, it's the urge. It's this drive too. This drive, it really shows you that you have lots of addictions, that we all have addictions. there's this background static of slight unease, or maybe fidgetiness, or restlessness, or boredom. And so we begin to use things to try to get some kind of relief from that unease. Something like food, or alcohol, or drugs, or sex, or working, or shopping, or whatever we do, which perhaps in moderation would be very delightful, like eating, enjoying your food. In fact, in moderation, there's this deep appreciation of the taste, of the good fortune to have this in your life. But these things become imbued with an addictive quality because we empower them with the idea that they will bring us comfort. They will remove this unease. We never get at the root. The root in this case is that we have to really experience unease. We have to experience the itch. We have to experience the shimpa and then not act it out. This business of not acting it out, I will call refraining. It's also called renunciation in some spiritual teachings. It's interesting because the Tibetan word for renunciation is shinluk, and it means turning shimpa upside down. Renunciation isn't about renouncing food or sex or work or relationship or whatever it is. There's this term, not attached to this life, not attached to worldly things. It's not really talking about the things themselves. It's talking about the shimpa. What we renounce and what we refrain from is the shimpa. Kind of a complex concept, really. It takes a few times through it to really let it sink in, I think. But it seems like a very potentially useful tool to help us get through, you know, the daily things we trip over. Oh, Tracy has her hand up. Tracy is muted. Hello, Tracy.
I don't believe I have my hand up.
Oh, I'm sorry. Cursor is a hand when it goes over someone's. Sorry about that. Okay. Any other comments? Or I don't.
Well, a question I have for you, Dennis, is: have you worked with this before yourself? What drew you to this topic?
I came across it in several different articles. And for me personally, Zen is somewhat esoteric, hard to get your arms around. And this was a little more concrete, a little more step by step. It seemed more easily attainable, understandable, I guess. There's definitely an abstract component to it, but I just like the four R's. You know, it just seemed like, you know, a good process. Tyler.
Hey, thanks, Dennis, for doing this. It's very wonderful to step in and run something like this. I guess one thing that just kind of, when we were thinking about the shimpa and good and bad and with meditation is, you know, I'm doing a program right now. I'm doing a counseling psychology program as I'm looking to change directions in my career. And, you know, right now, mindfulness and meditation is a really like, it's really being tried to being brought in into all aspects of counseling, but it's being brought in as a tool to improve yourself in a certain way, right? So it's got this like, there is, whereas I think our meditation is meant to be more purposelessness, purpose isn't the right word for something, but you know, do not think good or bad is a sort of thing was thing, but it's interesting because anytime anyone finds out in this program that I meditate, you know, the conversation always moves towards it as a self-improvement project. And I think that that's really easy to kind of fall into, like, this is making this part of my life better. This, but then when it's not, when you're having a frustrating, when you have a sit and you sing old song lyrics from your childhood for 30 minutes and you come out and, you know, and then all of a sudden you're down on yourself about a bad meditation. I guess that's the counter of anyways, I don't know if I'm, what direction I'm going in this, but I thought it was the using the shimpas are good and bad. You mentioned with meditation, just got me thinking about that as it seems to be that there's sort of an expectation of progress through something with meditation, and that can lead itself to all sorts of these attachments, I guess. Yeah, that's all.
Yeah, exactly. I remember in Genjo Koan, that was really stressed, that you don't try and quantify meditation. It's you don't try and measure your progress. You don't try and analyze, was it good, was it bad? You just do it, and don't try and quantify it. But there was a passage in here that was interesting that kind of spoke to what you were talking about psychotherapy, psychoanalysis, as it pertains to mindfulness. It says in Buddhism, the emphasis is not on the contents of the experience, as it would be in, say, psychotherapy. It's on the underlying qualities. That seems to be a huge differentiation. Psychotherapy is for self-improvement. You got bad stuff you need to get rid of and figure out to move forward. And I think we're, definitely this is all part of self-improvement, but I think there's a deeper underlying investigation going on, for lack of a better term. That's an important distinction, and I don't really know where you draw the line. It's kind of vague, where mindfulness, Buddhism, psychoanalysis, and all that, how they end up on the continuum. It's interesting.
You got a hand up.
Oh, Betty, yes.
Yeah, thanks, Dennis, for doing this. I like this teaching a lot. I like the four R's because I think it helps me. It helps me with kind of having a strategy for not just like completely disconnecting and detaching and removing myself from feeling. Because I think that's one of the temptations is, okay, I'm going to let go of attachment, which means I'm just going to not feel anything anymore. I'm not going to go down that path of feeling, having a thought during meditation and getting all freaked out about it, or, getting angry or reacting to some mean thing that somebody says to me. I'm just going to just let it go and not feel it. So I think this teaching of these four R's kind of allows you to go ahead and like, yeah, I'm going to feel that way. I'm going to recognize that this is what I'm feeling and this is where it's coming from. And these are the underlying feelings associated with whatever my reaction is. And then I'm going to go ahead and just not take that next step. I'm going to feel it, but I'm not going to act on it. So that's the refraining piece. And then just kind of sinking into it and relaxing with it and then resolving to have this be the way. So I really appreciate this conversation. And I actually I hadn't heard her speak before. So I Googled her and attachment and just listened to her speak on this today. And it was really fun. She's a really good speaker. And so I just really appreciate you doing this. And it's helpful to me to kind of help figure it out, you know? So thanks. That's all.
You're welcome. Glad to hear that. That's good. Pema Chodron is amazing. I've read a lot of her stuff, and she brings it down to earth. You know, she's very much into practical applications, you know, how to get things done. And, but still very loyal to basic Buddhist teachings. So, yeah, your comment too about drawing the line. I mean, you can't go through life not caring about anything. It's inevitable that things are going to pop up that are a problem. And I guess the idea is to accept that and realize that, and hopefully use some of these tactics to deal with it skillfully.
Yeah, I find that in the situations that I found myself in where I've just tried to detach from whatever it was so that I wouldn't have a bad feeling, you know, if you cultivate that skill, that bad skill, unskilled, whatever, it tends to permeate into all the things that you feel, all the areas, you know. It's like, well, I don't care about this. And so I'm just, it becomes kind of habit, that not caring and not letting the feelings come up. It just sort of becomes a habit that permeates all other aspects of your life. So, yeah. So I need to, I still need, it's a work in progress.
Indeed. Paulette.
Yeah, thank you for this talk.
You're welcome.
To kind of extend what Betty was talking about, like, I sometimes get stuck between the attachment and the aversion and then the indifference, well, amongst them, I guess. Because if you're not feeling attached to something and you're not feeling like you want to sort of push it away, then do you not care about it? And I think there's more than those three. You know, there could be just a sitting with it and, you know, observing what's happening in the mind in the moment. It's not like you just don't care what's going on, but you're sort of in the moment with your own mind and whatever reactions you're having, which I think is a nice alternative to not giving a crap, right, about anything. And then just sitting there and like being numb to it all. But maybe when you're there, just sort of observing your response. I mean, when I've been the most successful, and it's, you know, once in a blue moon, but there's moments when I'm able to sit with what I'm feeling and be just aware of the thoughts I'm having and the feeling sensations. And then I can get to a place where it's a little bit calmer, like the storm has passed and it's not so, you know, agitated or angry or upset or whatever the emotion. And that's not indifference. That's absolutely not indifference. That's feeling something, but maybe not reacting immediately to whatever's coming up. You know, that hook that you were talking about earlier. So, but
it's hard to get out in front of it like that. I mean, in the moment, it's hard to sit back and say, let's analyze the situation. Why am I reacting this way? And, reflexes, you know, we reflexively act, and it's hard to break those reflexes and, try and take that step back and recognize what's going on. I guess that's being in the moment.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting in this teaching that there's that, it's a, almost like a habit. It's like a habitual response. And the more that we resist it, the less habitual it is.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Zendo's quiet.
Well, I just want to share that, you know, in the few times that I have been aware that I've been able to do this, to refrain and just sit with something, it's it feels good. I mean, it feels right. And it's not like, oh yes, I did it. It's just like, this is the right way to deal with this. And you know, so it keeps me coming to the cushion, keeps me wanting to keep working on it, to continue doing it. So yeah, thank you.
Nice. Yeah, exactly.
That's awesome. That's so right. Like, I totally, thanks for saying that, Joan, because that's so true. You know, you do it when you get it, you know, it's like, yeah, oh, and it's, but you know, it also is like what you read too, Dennis, like it's the, it, that feeling of, oh, I did it, I'm successful, also is kind of like reinforcing and addicting in itself. But it's a positive thing. Yeah, that's, thanks for saying that.
I think I've been talking in the screen, but I'll do it anyway. It's funny coming here, you know, I haven't been here for a long time. I don't like driving here, but I was just hoping there'd be something on attachment. It's funny, and here it is. I mean, there's been several things that have come up this past week, but the one that, and I don't know if this counts, but I was in this incident that something happened during the day and I was just really bugged, but it wasn't that big of a thing, but I couldn't sleep that night. It just kept going over and over in my mind, sort of angry at this person. And I'm telling myself, I recognize that this is stupid. And no, of course I shouldn't say anything to this person. It's just how it is. And I thought I was the person that would let things bounce off me. But so I didn't sleep much that night, but I woke up the next morning and it was gone. I realized I was just a thought. It's not that important, certainly not worth reacting to the person. And so it's good.
So it just kind of fades. You sit with it.
I was lying with it, but yeah.
Okay, whatever. And so, it just kind of goes away.
It's, yeah, so it'll be a lesson in the future. And
nice. Very yeah. Nice. Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
We have a hand up.
Cassie.
Hi. Yes, thank you. I love this topic, by the way. I can't get enough of it because it's something I can always be better at. I like what you were reading, and I was watching another talk on something similar, and I think they're bleeding together, but just how you don't have to give up like all these worldly pleasures so much. Like you don't have to just give up everything you own and go to a cave somewhere and sit on top of a mountain. In fact, that's probably not. You're probably missing the point, but when you practice this non-attachment, like things just don't matter as much, or you can really enjoy them for what they are. Like I've noticed that that's been true in my life, is when I just want to, as the strong aversion to everything, like sugar and pizza or whatever the case may be, whatever this craving is, it's more of an attachment to it, right? This restriction and then the craving. So like I've noticed that just by practicing, you know, healthy non-attachment, still with loving kindness, where I can still be present, it's that they just, those things can still be in my life. I just, they're not as important, take it or leave it. And I think that's just been such a wonderful thing to kind of be like, oh yeah, it doesn't matter. If I am in a cave with none of my possessions, I can still be happy, but I can still drive my car to work too. And that's okay too, right? I don't have to just be so black and white. And I think that's the balance in what I hear a lot of people saying, and what I've, you know, found in my own life is just that non-black and white thinking. And yeah, so thank you everybody for sharing, and thank you, Dennis.
Yeah. One thing that really jumped out at me was kind of the essence of, I think, what she was talking about. So the sentence reads, when we can figure out how to be with the reality of impermanence, we're practicing non-attachment. And it kind of goes back to that story that the Chinese monk told about the glass, the attachment to the glass. Don't thoroughly understand that, but his attitude was, it's already broken. So I don't know, I actually apply that in real life terms, but if, you know, we can figure out how to accept the reality of impermanence, this, the attachment just kind of goes away. Sounds simple, just one sentence. How hard can it be?
Betty's got her hand up.
Betty, yes.
So when you read that about the broken glass, it reminded me of this book that I'm reading by Frank Ostrzeski. Am I saying that right? He's the Zen hospice guy. He wrote a book called Five Invitations. And the first invitation is don't wait, because it's kind of like we're all going to die soon. But so if you approach life with the knowledge that it's impermanent, then you'll cherish the moments with your loved ones or whoever more, sort of being in the moment. But it reminds me of that broken glass metaphor. Anyway, that's how I'm thinking about it these days, because I'm reading that book, which has been really helpful. So thanks.
I think it's one of those things that requires some sort of an epiphany, you know, like Domio's talk last Sunday. Once you have one of these monumental realizations, what do you do with it? And I think to really get an in-depth understanding, you have to have something like that, some type of a real awakening, or a mini enlightenment or whatever, to really grasp it, you know. Still waiting for one of those. We'll keep shooting for it. Well, that's kind of all I had. I guess if we could finish a little early. Is that anybody else has any other comments or questions?
Can someone type in the name of the reading that we did in the chat, just so I can, I didn't catch the name of what the actual reading was.
It's there's a link to it in the
email that went out last Friday.
Oh, is there? Oh, okay. I can.
Yeah, it's
the whole thing there?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah, well, it's good.
Yeah. Actually, yeah. Yeah, I sent the link and she put it in the weekly update. And I don't know what the title is. Let's see. What is the title of this thing?
Is it in the newsletter, you're saying?
It's in the weekly newsletter, yes.
Newsletter. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, the weekly email newsletter. So Pima Chandran's simple four-step practice for working with attachment.
Yeah.
I don't remember who the author was, but the important part was from Pima Chandran, I thought. His interpretation was good, but hers was better. So.
Thank you, Dennis.
I just dropped a link in the chat to one of Pima's books about this for my child wrote. So if you look in chat, there's a link to Goodreads.
Thank you.
I actually just bought it too.
What is the name of the book, Gaffel?
Taking the Leap.
I think I've heard of that, yeah. Yeah, that'd be better than any article. That's probably the whole book on the topic would be a lot better than any article, I think. So, but thank you for that. I don't remember how to do that, so can someone else?
We offer the merit of this Sangha meeting to all so they may be able to obtain the truth, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay, I guess we're going to close. We offer the merit of this Sangha meeting to all
so
that they may be able to
obtain the truth.
All Buddhas throughout space and time, all honored ones, Bodhisattvas, Mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, Maha Prajna Paramita.
Thank you, Dennis.
Thank you all.